Michelle Live Podcast.
My Michelle Live.
Well, we are getting geared up for the holidays, and for me, and maybe for you too, Christmas is coming early because we're going to have a conversation with an old friend. So excited to take it on. Here's what we're going to be talking about as we get into Christmas, and the pandemic has not gone away. Many of us are still on lockdown, and things are a little different this year. So what do you do? Well, for Christmas, it looks like we are turning to Google. We're trying to Google what to get. We're trying to find out what the best gifts are. And there's a lot that we need to take into consideration. We are going to be talking with the Google gal herself and technology trends expert, Molly Vanderberg. Molly, oh my gosh, it's Christmas for me. It's good to talk with you again, friend.
Michelle, it is so wonderful to be back with you. It warms my heart and is a great way to start my holiday season.
Well, we have some interesting statistics that in 2020, 77% of U.S. shopping purchases are supposed to be planned and researched beforehand, which is different. I know that Christmas Eve, if you've gone to the malls in years past, the parking lots are packed with last-minute shoppers. So this is a big difference for people, isn't it?
It really is. People are approaching how they shop a lot differently this year. And I think a lot of people are spending time online, but as a result, also spending more time researching. And you mentioned at the beginning, it is difficult to know what to get for everyone on your list. And so we at Google want to make that really easy, not only helping get some inspiration, but also helping you find the best price and figure out what's going to work best for you. And so this morning, actually, we released what we call our Google Shopping Gift Guide, which you can find at g.co/giftguide. And this has a lot of the different trending products that we anticipate are going to be popular in the next month. And that's organized into different lists based on people's personalities. So whether you're looking for gifts for the chef or the athlete or the kids in your life, we have some suggestions that can be a good starting point.
That's pretty amazing. It's very helpful. I am kind of curious, though, what are some of the hottest gifts that people are Googling?
Yes. And so a lot of these are very fascinating. And I think so many of us have been spending more time at home. So I think home goods as a category is one that's popular for a lot of people and maybe in new ways than it had been previously. I know both you and I love our coffee. And so when we look at our trending kind of kitchen items, there are several different coffee makers, but the Mr. Coffee iced coffee maker tops the list, as well as a couple from Nespresso. And then I think that air fryers are really having a moment, which has been kind of interesting. And that also goes with another item for the home that I think is incredibly specific to this year, which is patio heaters. Also makes the list.
That makes a lot of sense. Some of the things that you can find online too are pretty unique. I found what's hot for Christmas, and even Googling what not to get people for Christmas, you know what came up was socks with people's faces on it. You can actually do this. I am not kidding. You can Google it. You can find personalized socks with your face on it to give to everyone. That should be on the what not to get list, probably. I don't know. Maybe there's some people out there. But there's also a big item that people have been talking about a lot, the mirror, which is a big ticket item, like $1,500. And it's an exercise mirror. You can, it's interactive. I can't imagine that things are any different this year, Molly, but they say never get someone exercise equipment. What do you think?
I think it really comes down to a very personal decision. I think there has been a lot of interest in fitness as a concept, and a lot of people have been finding ways to do that in their own home. And so I think you kind of need to suss it out and make a judgment call. Like, is this the kind of person who really enjoys their me time at the gym and is maybe looking for a new way to do that? If so, then maybe something fitness related is a great gift for them. If it's someone who maybe it doesn't seem like they had a vested interest in that area up up until this point, I might say stay away. That might send the message that you don't intend.
Yeah, like, you know, if someone is a little insecure in sending them exercise equipment, I don't know, it might just say, hey, here's a hint for you. I don't know if Christmas is a time for hints, but I do know that Christmas is a great time to find a great deal. And you at Google have the corner on how to help people do that. You've been doing this a while.
We have some great tools that we've really built out to help people accomplish what they need, and in which case is oftentimes getting a great deal. And as you mentioned, we know that people are spending time online researching their gifts. And so we want to bring those tools to them right where they're looking for them and right where they need them. So if you're looking up a particular item on Google and you click on the shopping tab, you're going to find a lot of different tools that I think are really excellent here. The first one is called the Price Insights module, and we keep hearing a lot about the retailers who have sales and deals, but sometimes it's tough to know how good that sale really is. This will show you whether the price for an item is low, typical, or high based on historical information, so you can make a good decision. And then we also have a price tracking feature and a way to compare them across different prices on the internet, so that way you make sure that you're getting the best price that you possibly can.
Oh, that is so wonderful. But something else I think that is even better. This is one of the best tools that you can help us with today. This, we've already passed Small Business Saturday. Small businesses are suffering across the country, and they really are the bread and butter of our communities. It's so sad. But when you think of shopping online, you're thinking of the big guys making big money, but you can also utilize tools to shop locally.
You absolutely can. And I think it's top of mind for a lot of people this season, and for good reason. And so two quick things that I'll mention. The first is that we talked about Google Shopping already. If you are looking for an item, you can actually put a filter on to say nearby, to say, you know, where maybe I can find this item near me and I can go pick it up with curbside pickup. And so that's an option. But I also really love to recommend Google Maps as a tool for this. It's really great for understanding your neighborhood and your city and the places that you might want to support. For example, I love to support my local bookstore. If I type in bookstores near me, I get all of the great business information, including their hours and if they've been updated. But I can also see from those businesses themselves if they're doing in-store shopping or curbside pickup, or if I can link out to their website and purchase something online. So there really are options no matter how you're trying to approach the season.
That is a great idea, because I know you're a runner and you have inspired me to get moving, especially during this pandemic. I think of you, Molly. And so I might use my Google Maps to see what's near me and walk or do a little jog or run to my local retailer to pick up something for Christmas. I like that. Now, here's where I want to get into how to protect ourselves. With people shopping online more than any other time, I understand, and you'll have to correct me on this, but more than any time in the history that Google's been tracking this, we're seeing more online shopping. But with that comes with security issues, maybe some fears.
Yes, we are seeing online shopping as a topic reach all-time high in terms of search interest in 2020. And I think that no matter what you're doing online, people are always a little bit concerned about protecting their personal information. And as they should be, it's really important. And so as you continue to shop and enter your credit card or address information, the number one tip that I'll give to everyone is to use unique passwords. I think a lot of us fall into the habit of using the same one over and over again because it's what we remember. But that's like giving the same key to your house and your car and your office. And so you do want to switch it up. And a great way to do that is with a password manager, because I know I can't remember all the passwords, and this will suggest really strong ones and save them for you. So then that way you only have to remember that one login and have really secure passwords everywhere else, which is great.
It is like magic. And can I just give you a tip as you're listening? Don't use derivatives of passwords. My tech guy got on my case because I thought, oh, I'm all secure. I'm using $@S$. It's like, no, you know what? People figure that out, Michelle. You need something crazy with tildes. If you even know what that is, I didn't. And some really creative passwords. So those password creators are awesome. And they can follow you on your other devices when you're logged in. It's just, it's amazing. So thank you for that. And I wanted to do a rundown of some of the sites that you mentioned, the addresses, so that we can connect with the shopping guides and some of the budgeting tools and deals that are out there that Google recommends.
Of course. So I would say that the place to go for all the trending products is g.co/giftguide. And then in terms of all of these other features, the best place to access them is to search for any item and then click on the shopping tab on Google.
I like it. Oh, thank you so much. You're getting us started in the right direction. Hey, oh, one quick question. This is something I really wanted to know. Again, going back to the busy malls at Christmas Eve. Some of us shopped last minute. I'm not one of them, but I know a lot of people are. Is it almost too late to do shopping? How do you know you're going to get your items on time?
It's a great question, and it's top of mind for a lot of people, especially as they're placing orders and they're thinking, how long is this going to take to get to me? And I think that, of course, you'll see estimates from retailers, but if you are planning on shopping in person, one thing that I think is really useful is not only can you see if certain items are in stock near you, which we talked about, but there's also a great feature in Google Maps that gives you real-time busyness information. So if you want to look up even a grocery store and see, hey, is it going to be really busy when I get there? That will give you an estimate using aggregate anonymized data. So it could be an excellent tool in planning your trip.
No kidding. And especially in our state that I broadcast from, Washington State, some of the retailers are limited to how many people they can come in. And man, I don't want to wait outside in the rain. So great tool. And final question, Molly, what do you want for Christmas?
You know, it is a really great question, and I will admit that I don't find that I have as many items on my list as I might in a typical year. I think I've come to understand a lot of things that I can appreciate that I already have, but for me, books are always a big one, so I'm hoping for a couple of those, and ideally from local businesses as well.
There you go. I like that as well. That's not a bad idea. I'll keep that in mind. Molly, it is so good to talk with you again. It's been a little while. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Thank you for being with us.
Michelle, Merry Christmas to you. It was such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, friend.
Hey, it is time to get us hacked into the best Christmas presents ever. Today, of course, it's all about getting hacked. So we are getting King's Tech Report for Christmas.
Be the boy, King.
Tech, 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 tech.
King's Tech Report on My Michelle Live.
Hey, King.
Hi, Michelle. How's it going?
Oh, I'm getting geared up for Christmas. I've got the Christmas tree decorated. I'm starting on cookies. Presents already under the tree. So in these last couple of weeks, we're kind of searching for things for people on our list that we just don't know what to get for. And tech is always big.
Oh, yeah. I know that feeling of not knowing what to get your friend or your family member all too well, to be honest.
But so, this year, but, help us out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I want to preface this. All of these things you can find on Amazon. And last I checked, which was probably about half an hour ago, they were all still in stock and ready to be kind of get to your house by Christmas. So,
oh, bless your heart. Bless your tech-driven heart. I love it. What do you got on the list?
So, starting off, we're going to go with something that I've been obsessed with for the last 5 years. It's a personal hobby of mine. It's a 3D printer.
Oh, wow. I mean, are they affordable? Are they usable for the average person? Because it just seems so far-fetched, and yet it seems like we really can have them in our house next to our other printer, you know, doing cool stuff.
I know that's the surprising thing. The print, I actually have one of these printers. The first one I'm going to talk about is the Annette A8 printer. And right now it's under $200. It's a great printer. I can say that with confidence because I've been using mine for the last 2 years.
Okay, so what is it good for?
It's good for the, if you're not a techie person, if you're not a techie person, I would suggest crafts, arts and crafts. You can use it for educational material. Like if you want to teach your kid how a planet looks, you can easily just go onto Thingiverse, which is a free sharing site for 3D models and such, and print off something. And it's just nice and fun. The other part
yeah,
is...
Yeah, especially when people are home. You know, if you're home teaching your kids and you want to talk about the interior of a body or what the inner workings of a car looks like. Or I mean, there are all kinds of things, especially for tactile children who need to touch things. You can print things as simple as the alphabet and as complex as a human heart.
Exactly. Exactly. And another printer that I'd suggest to other people is the Creality Ender 3. And it's spelled like reality with a C in front of it. It's really easy. That seems to be the go-to printer for beginners. It's just over $200, but still, it's affordable. It's awesome. And like you were saying, tactile learners, I remember a story a little while ago. Blind mother couldn't actually look at the ultrasound of her child. So you want to know what the doctors did?
Oh my gosh, they 3D printed the baby.
Exactly.
Oh, get out. That is so beautiful. What a wonderful thing to think about. So let your imagination soar. You might consider a 3D printer as a crazy over the top and why not gift for Christmas. What else do you got for us in King's Tech Report for Christmas?
Well, again, this is another hobby of mine. I have a Campark 4K action camera. It's $50. It's just like a GoPro. Of course, not everyone can afford a GoPro at like, how many dollars is it? $200, $300 at the moment?
Yeah. Not cheap.
So,
and that's something you can take with you. It's something you can utilize if you're a TikToker or if you just want to make some fun films. Now, you are our video guru as well. So this is something that is right up your alley for really understanding and helping us to keeping connected with family, letting family know what you're doing. You can use something like this like you would your GoPro.
Exactly. And connecting with family, that's a really great thing because I've actually got something on the list for that.
Sweet.
Because of COVID, all of that stuff, we're now stuck in our homes alone. But that's okay because, and my parents actually got this for my grandparents earlier this year. It's a portal TV from Facebook.
It's what?
It's a portal TV. So what you can do, Facebook has come out with, I don't know if you've seen it already, Michelle, but Facebook has come out with basically just kind of little standing tablets that connect directly to Facebook Messenger and Alexa and Amazon Alexa. And what you can do is you can chat with your friends. You can chat with your family, all of that, video calls, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Make it really easy for grandparents and some of the aged people who aren't all tech guru'd up like you are. And just make it super easy to connect with family. I like it. And it's not just for older people, though. It's for those of us who just want an easy connection.
Exactly. And the Portal TV specifically, this can mount on top of any existing TV or under. It just hooks up HDMI, power in, connect to your Wi-Fi, and there you go. It's ready to go.
That's really precious. I know that through the pandemic especially, there are ways that people can get into rooms for Facebook, have Facebook parties, viewing parties, teach classes, cook together, eat dinner together, have a date, whatever it might be. So this might be something for someone you love that you'd like to connect with a little bit more.
Exactly.
All right. We have room for time for maybe one or two more quick ones.
Okay. I'm going to do two more really quick. This is for your kids if they're really into video games. I know that everyone on YouTube has started doing Let's Plays and streams and all of that. A really nice thing for if you're trying to do a stream on like Xbox or PlayStation, there's a 4K video capture card. It's a simple little USB or HDMI to USB, and it's under $20. 4K video streams straight to your computer, and it acts like a normal camera input. So it's like if you want to stream your 360 no scopes on Battlefield, there you go.
Wow. It's amazing what's really out
easy,
there.
Really easy to use for anybody. Something to go along with that is a Thrustmaster Key Flight Stick. It's basically just a joystick system that you can use for your consoles, PlayStation, Xbox, PC, because I personally, I love flight simulators.
That is kind of a cool thing.
You can
right?
blame my father for that because he used to be a pilot, but I love him.
That's great. And so you don't have to worry about airport, social distancing, making sure you have your vaccination before you fly. You can just do it right there in your living room. I love it. You have given us a little insight into some of the coolest technology that might be under your tree, but even if it's not, now it's in your head, and that's kind of cool. Thank you so much. And we'll catch you next time for King's Text. Hello. Good thing she's recording, right? Because she cannot speak. King's Tech Report.
Be the boy, King.
Tech.
King's Tech Report on My Michelle Live.
My Michelle Live Science and Technology Tuesday. We are getting hacked today. Brain-computer interfaces, BCI. This technology is no longer hypothetical. Welcome to tomorrow. Basic fundamental conversations on this haven't really advanced a lot. And it is so important. These are important aspects of technology that are unaddressed by ethicists, by policymakers. And has anyone asked you, by the way, what you think about people poking around in your brain with implants? Well, we're going to be taking it on today. And joining us, we're going to talk with someone who doesn't need a computer link in his brain because he's that smart. He's also fun, too. I don't know if you can get a fun chip in, but he doesn't need that either. In the midst of it, we'll also give you reasons.
And now, Reasons to Believe.
Yes, we will. Reasons to Believe, Dr. Fuzz Rana is with us. Now, Dr. Rana is a biochemist. He's a vice president of research and apologetics at Reasons to Believe. He's written books that will fascinate you and get you a little learned at the same time, like Who Was Adam? A Creation Model Approach to the Origin of Humanity, Origins of Life. And this one, which doing research into this book really puts him at an expert level for this conversation today, Humans 2.0, the scientific, philosophical, and theological perspectives on transhumanism. Dr. Rana, happy holidays. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's good to talk with you again.
Well, Merry Christmas, Michelle, and it is good
Thank
to hang
you.
Out with you. I've always have a good time chatting with you.
Yeah, you know, this one is going to be fascinating. Brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs, have been around for a while. We're hearing that they're here today, and wow, these things that we can do. We'll talk about Elon Musk. We'll talk about even some creepy stuff that may be going on. But scientists have been implanting electrodes in the human brain since, what, the 1950s?
Yeah, I mean, people have been playing around with this idea of trying to create an interface between the electrical activity in our brains and basically, you know, hardware and computer software. And just in recent years, because of the advances in technology, we really are beginning to see the prospects of brain-computer interfaces becoming a reality and approaching really clinical use and clinical applications, which is exciting, cool, but also frightening.
It is. If we have our technology advancing, as we often talk about on this program, faster than our morality, you know, there you are. You've got technology advancing and in some ways morality retreating. So it can be problematic, but you mentioned some of the clinical aspects of BCIs, brain-computer interfaces. We've used them to treat Parkinson's disease, to help people who are paralyzed. Less than 40 hours ago, actually, before this broadcast, there was a news story that was published on Essential Science, brain implant that can restore vision to the blind. So by using a brain implant, researchers have restored kind of a rudimentary form of vision to the blind. It's an electrical stimulation that's directed into to the brain through an implanted electrode.
Michelle, I found a news clip on that exact thing. This is from UCLA Health.
After losing his sight in a car accident, Jason Esterhazen never dreamed he'd see light or movement again. But with the flick of a switch,
wow,
his world suddenly grew brighter.
I still can't put it into words. I mean, from being able to see absolutely nothing, it's pitch black, to all of a sudden seeing little flickers of light move around.
While it's not normal sight, a groundbreaking device implanted in Jason's brain at UCLA Health allows him to navigate the world around him.
Being able to tell where a doorway is, being able to tell where the sidewalk begins or ends, or where the crosswalk is, are all extremely meaningful events that can help these people regain some form of independence.
Dr. Nader Paradian implanted the device made by Second Sight over the visual cortex in Jason's brain. The Orion device converts images from a tiny video camera on a pair of sunglasses into a series of electrical pulses. Those pulses stimulate electrodes in Jason's brain that let him see patterns of light that act as visual cues.
We basically have the video camera and the video processing unit functioning or performing the functions of what the eye normally does, and we go directly back to the brain.
By moving his head, Jason can distinguish light areas and objects from dark.
There's little white dots on a black background. It's like looking up at the stars at night.
BCI. I mean, it's rudimentary, but we might be looking at people who are blind being able to see again. I mean, who needs Jesus, right? We don't need anyone to lay hands on the blind. We've got science.
Well, you know, and this is really, in my mind, science at its very best and science at its most highest use,
mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know.
And forgive me, if you're just listening, can I just interrupt for a moment and interrupt myself? I'm not trying to be sacrilegious, but these are the miracles that we used to see of old. So back to what you were saying, this is science at its best.
It is, and you know, from a Christian worldview perspective, I'm deeply committed to anything that we can do to mitigate human pain and suffering, to promote human flourishing. And, you know, so many people who are locked in because of a brain injury, who are amputees, who are, you know, quadriplegics, paraplegics, who are blind, as you were pointing out, who are suffering from dementia, these are people that have had aspects of their humanity, in a sense, robbed from them because of disease or injury. And so if we can do even something little to help restore some of that lost capability, it helps to, in a sense, to rehumanize them to some degree. You might say that. And so to me, as a Christian, this is really exciting stuff that I'm really excited to see in terms of
yes.
what it can mean for changing people's lives. But mm-hmm. but the danger, as you're pointing out, is that it's very easy to slip into a mindset that not only is science and technology a tool, but it could become the source of our salvation. And I think we're beginning to see that mentality increase in popularity in our culture at large, but very much so in the academy. where there's this movement called transhumanism, where the ultimate goal is to try to save humanity and save each of us through the use of science and technology. And that's where I think things can go really horribly wrong.
Right. Because on one end, as you mentioned, there's wonderful things that we are so excited about. Most of this technology that can turn creepy, that can turn dangerous, that sometimes we don't think about all of the implications, are often created for great, extraordinary great good. I mean, there have been varied studies with human participants on paralysis, for example, who have been given BCI implants to do things from control their own limbs, even though paralyzed, to being able to utilize the computer with a computer cursor just by thinking about moving the mouse. Those are some extraordinary things. Yet, there are oftentimes we don't think of the consequences. Let's go to something very simple, and then we'll get into the idea of implanting things into the brain. Our cell phones, Dr. Rana, those have saved so many lives. I mean, maybe you've taken some as people are texting and driving, but let's just say being able to call 911, being stuck in a snowstorm off the side of the road and being able to call for help, someone being able to locate you, getting information online, they save our lives. But some of the side effects have been some of the waves that can affect our brain, can be cancer-causing, the fact that we don't communicate and we're losing human touch and depression sets in. We don't often think of the other side of the coin.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, to your point, technology is always a double-edged sword. You know, it many times will actually deliver on its promises of improving the quality of our lives, but there's always these unintended consequences that introduce pain and suffering and misery where there wasn't any before. And we wind up getting on this vicious circle where we then develop new technologies to try to mitigate the pain and suffering that we caused with a previous technology, and it goes on and on and on. And this in and of itself should be enough to convince people that technology can never truly save us. Because it's always a double-edged sword. And the more powerful the technology, the more frightening the unintended consequences. And, of course, from a Christian worldview perspective, we also recognize that people are sinful and there is evil in the world. And, again, this technology can not only be, used for good, but can also be misused for horrific purposes. And, again, the more powerful the technology, the more frightening the intentional misuse. So it's a complex situation to be certain. We need a worldview that really helps us to navigate this complex ethical framework.
Well put. Now, I know that you are a science fiction kind of buff, right?
I am.
You like that kind of stuff. Yeah, okay. We just interviewed an author whose book will be out in November. It's called Breaking Yesterday. Brent R. Baker is the author. And Fuzz, you have to read this book. It's extraordinary about technology interfaced with kind of a spiritual darkness that allows an entity to try to send a couple of people back in time to kill the baby Jesus at his most vulnerable. But it takes some interesting twists and turns because their technology is interfaced with kind of the human brain and utilizes humans and human parts in order to make this advanced computer. Okay, so I'm sorry if there's any spoilers there, but I'm telling you, his mind being able to create this just blew me away. It was both creepy and amazing at the same time. Yet, I bring that up because now the University of Pennsylvania researchers recently implanted living electrodes into animal brains. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, and it all goes back to the brain-computer interfaces, is that the most effective brain-computer interface that we can currently build is one that's known as an invasive one, where you literally are implanting electrodes into specific regions of the brain. And the idea here is that you get a very strong signal from the different regions of the brain. You can focus on specific regions and isolate the activity of a limited number of neurons, which is really helpful when you're trying to control hardware and software. But the problem is, as you might imagine, is the very act of introducing the electrode into the brain can cause scarring and damage to the brain tissue. It can elicit an immune response. And then over time, there are these cells called glial cells that are like part of the brain's connective tissue that kind of coat the electrodes, diminishing their performance. And so people are trying to come up with a biocompatible solution. And these researchers from the University of Pennsylvania developed these really thin tubes that they could essentially get neurons to grow on one end and send their axons down the length of the tube. And as a result of that, create a living electrode, which is essentially neurons that can then be implanted in the brain like you would an electrode that can pick up brain activity and then communicate that activity to a microchip on the brain. But what's also interesting about this is that these neurons have been genetically engineered to respond to light. So you can use LEDs on the surface of the brain to trigger those neurons to fire when you want them to fire. And so this sounds like science fiction, but this is a successful experiment where they showed in rats that this works. So who knows what these brain computer interfaces are going to look like in the future, where it could be this amalgam of electronics and bio systems that are all foreign to the human being, that are all implants.
Now you're listening to the My Michelle Live podcast, SciTech Talk, where we're getting hacked. So this living electrode, what exactly is it in layman's terms? You know, what is it? I mean, when you say living, and I understand the kind of biochemical makeup, but what does that exactly mean to when you say living? I mean, get visions of Frankenstein. What do you mean?
I mean, in a sense, what they're doing is they're taking neurons and they are coaxing those neurons to form, in a sense, electrodes. And so they're planting those into the brain.
Right.
So you're literally introducing neurons into the brain, but you're getting with the architecture of how they are formed in this tube-like gel, allows them to basically interface with other neurons and naturally make use of the normal types of synaptic connections in the brain, and then transmit an electrical current along that electrode to, again, some kind of device. So it's essentially nerve cells that are functioning like electrodes.
And the interesting thing about this is where we now have interface that is maybe like electronic, you know, we can all kind of relate to that. We may have seen that or been exposed to that, where it's an electronic impulse or jolt. This allows, by using these neurons, we can speak the same language of the nervous system. So in other words, it's almost like we can hack the brain. Is that a way we could say it?
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it, is exactly that way, because now you don't have, you know, to worry about biocompatibility. If you develop those neurons from stem cells from the patient, hypothetically, there's not going to be an immune response to it, an immune reaction. And so it's just much less damaging to the brain, and the electrodes are going to last a much longer period of time, and it's a much more natural connection. And so presumably this will improve the performance of these brain-computer interfaces, making them really even more powerful devices.
So we can utilize this, and once again, technology being developed to eliminate human suffering, trying to be used for good, we can help to maybe eliminate those that are experiencing epileptic seizures, people who have neurological damage. Is that what we're looking at?
Yes. And these things would be really useful for things like cochlear implants or, you know, maybe some kind of retinal implants, because these neurons have been genetically engineered to respond to light. So you could have some kind of device that would pick up sound waves, convert that sound energy into light energy, and you would target it at a particular set of neurons that would then send a pulse into the cochlea and allow for there to be an interpretation of sound, as an example. So really slick technology and very creative technology, on one hand. But again, there's always a downside with everything like this. And one of the downsides is that you're going to have a source of stem cells. And so this reignites kind of the pressure to make use of embryonic stem cells to support the development of these living electrodes.
And what about that creepy side of how much, well, this person is useless, or we can just take a human baby that's unwanted? That gets into the ethical issue. What about the issues of biohacking? I mean, can someone foreseeably hack your brain?
Well, you know, this is one of the real concerns with brain-computer interfaces, is because because they're recording, basically, you know, you're recording brain activity, and these interfaces make use of, in some instances, very sophisticated algorithms to decode that electrical activity in the brain and then to interpret it as the intent of the user, the intent of the patient. And because of that, because you're generating now this output from the electrical activity in your brain, suddenly you have a real loss of privacy, you know, where people very well could have access to some of your most, you know, intimate thoughts that you don't want to share with anyone necessarily, or with only a select few people, you know. Or these interfaces actually work in the opposite direction. So not only can you create an output from your brain, but you can actually feed information from external devices into the brain. And so you could potentially control people's, you know, thoughts, or control people's behavior. So, for example, you mentioned the use of these brain-computer interfaces to treat Parkinson's patients. And this is really very exciting, because electrical stimulation to the right areas of the brain mitigates the symptoms of Parkinson's. The people have discovered that those patients actually have personality changes, where they become much more prone to risky behavior. They lose self-control. And so you literally are changing that patient's personality while you, at the same time, you're controlling the Parkinson's symptoms. And so, you know, that just shows you that you could very well hack somebody's brain and begin to force them to do things that are really outside their desire or outside their control.
We've already done that for decades with pharmaceuticals. You know, we change people's brain chemistry. We change them just a bit, all for the name of good. Yet when we're looking at what could happen in the future, we think, I oftentimes, in at least in the United States, and tell me if you agree with this, Dr. Rana, we think in terms of, well, we have checks and balances because that's our society, but checks and balances aren't used all over the world. And we're not the only ones who have a handle on this kind of technology. So what happens when someone says, you know what, we're going to use this grand technology? On one hand, we could upload information and I could be smarter. On the other hand, we could fix some of those problematic people with the wrong kind of political views and the wrong kind of spiritual views. And we could just make the world a little bit of a better place because we all think and act the same. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a nefarious, but a potential use for this kind of technology is, you know, there's really nothing to keep somebody who is rogue from misusing the technology in this way. Now, I mean, right now, the technology is difficult to use and is expensive, so it's not going to be in the hands of a lot of people. But over time, as the technology becomes more and more broadly accessible and becomes more standardized, who's to stop someone from beginning to do these very types of things or attempting to do these very types of things?
Yeah, so, right. And it's not something we've done a lot of talking about. Technology seems to grow so fast, it's hard to keep up with it, with lawmakers, people who are in leadership positions, and with the discussion of ethics.
Yeah, and that, you know, I've read a number of bioethicists who are lamenting the fact that, you know, as this new technology comes online and the progress is happening so rapidly, that there's really no time to effectively deliberate on it. But on top of that, they're beginning to argue that we really don't have an ethical framework to really process many of these advances, because we're now looking at doing things to human beings that nobody ever imagined or envisioned that we would be able to do. And so there's a very real need for a robust ethical framework. And to me, what I find remarkable is that the Christian worldview does indeed produce a system of ethics that, even though it's 2,000 years old, is robust enough to handle these unimaginable advances in technology.
That's cool. That is so cool. Are you kidding me? That's what we want to get to the God story, because we need it now more than ever. Now, you say unimaginable, some of these things that we never imagined that we could do. Yeah, we have imagined them in science fiction. And then we look at what could possibly go wrong, and it's as though we completely ignore that. I get that. And think of some of the other things that are happening. Elon Musk's brain-computer interface company Neuralink has this ambition to make connecting the brain to a computer as simple as going and getting eye LASIK surgery. So you could go in and have a computer chip roughly the size of maybe a nickel or a quarter, and have it implanted into the human brain via a robot surgeon. And this link will wirelessly connect your brain to the digital world, so you can just start downloading things. I read that in many books in the past. This is the world that we live in. Elon Musk, Fuzz, said that he created Neuralink to address the AI symbiosis problem, which he thought was an existential threat. And he thought, we need to be able to keep up with AI. We need to be able to advance, as you mentioned, to be transhuman, to be better than human. We need to evolve. These are some things that we're looking at that are becoming reality. But without that framework of some kind of ethics, we're as doomed as some of those crazy sci-fi books and movies that you and I might like to indulge in. So let's talk about that framework and what does exist out there within the biblical framework, but also in any other kind of framework. Is there any other ethics that can really effectively address this?
Well, you know, from my perspective, you know, there really isn't a secular-based system of ethics that I think really helps guide our decision-making here.
Why?
You know, well, because ultimately these systems are either based on what's called consequentialism, that you try out an idea and you look at to see what the consequences are. And then if you don't like the consequences, then you adjust, you know, your system of ethics. Well,
yeah, try unringing a bell.
Exactly. That is not the best way to go. Or you have some kind of framework that relies on, you know, sentience, you know, where you say, well, anything that's sentient, we're going to do what we can to minimize pain and suffering and to promote, you know, flourishing for sentient beings. But the question is, I don't even know how you define sentience, let alone measure it. And that leads you into situations where it's okay to to mess around with a human embryo because it isn't sentient. It's not self-aware. And so I can do whatever I want to that embryo because I don't have to treat it as being a bona fide human being. So you wind up in these situations where, you know, is it okay for a few people to be exploited for the benefit of a large number of people? And so this is the concern with secular ethics. But to me, the Christian worldview is so powerful because there's a very strong motivation in the Christian worldview to develop science and to develop technology. It's part of our biblical mandate, I would even say, when we look at the creation account in Genesis 1. But we also recognize that every human being is made in God's image and has infinite worth and value. So this kind of puts the brakes on, you know, developing technology and without, you know, considering the ramifications. So the Christian worldview would be excited and promote development of computer brain interfaces, but would have, I think, the strong recognition of the need to preserve human identity and human dignity and value in the process. And so I just don't know of any other worldview that gives you that combination of being pro-science, but also really being protective about human beings.
Fuzz, what about a God hack? It sounds to me like we were talking about being able to hack into your brain to have your brain controlled, sometimes for good and maybe nefariously as well, to fix those crazy problems if you're voting for the wrong person or if you think differently than what is socially acceptable. There are some scary things that we mentioned, but it sounds like what we could use is a God hack. And I wanted to take that on because this transcends just the scientific conversation we've been having to a spiritual level where God gives a framework, wouldn't you say, of how an extraordinary intelligence beyond our comprehension or explanation interfaces with humanity, which is what we're trying to do with incredible intelligence with a computer interfacing with the human mind and helping to correct certain problems that we have. But God already does that and has a framework in place if you believe the biblical narrative.
Yeah, you know, and this is the thing that is, you know, I think remarkable about Christianity is that it's through our relationship with God, mediated by the person of Christ and the power of the Holy Spirit, that we are able to undergo a very real change, a very real transformation. When we enter into that relationship with God through Christ, our spirit is changed. And I actually think that our spirit can interact with our mind and our mind interact with our brain and bring about those changes in our brain chemistry that make us the best version of ourselves. And strip away those parts of our nature that are really that we really want to, if we're honest, get rid of, that we really don't like in ourselves. But also, the ultimate promise of Christianity is that one day that we'll be resurrected and we'll have these resurrection bodies where there's not going to be pain and suffering, where we're going to be free from our biological limitations. And in a sense, Christianity in that sense is really the true form of transhumanism, where there will be a change in who we are when we enter into the eternal state with our Creator and are resurrected from the dead. So Christianity really offers us that hope that I think transhumanism could never offer.
And we can look at something spectacular that can take place. There's a biblical reference that sums up what you just said. It's 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creation. He's a new creature. Old things are passed away. All things have become new. I think that can really pinpoint what we've been talking about today from a God implant versus an electronic implant.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, the whole idea behind transhumanism and even the ideas of Elon Musk are really all about how do we find hope, purpose, and destiny? How do we find salvation for each of us as individuals and for humanity as a whole? And science and technology, while powerful, while can be used for enormous amount of good, are never going to be the source of salvation, can never truly be the source of hope. This is really where the gospel comes in. But what I love about these conversations is that if we're clever, we can readily make that connection between the gospel and the ultimate desire that people have who are pursuing this transhumanist vision, and point to the fact that it's only through Christ that our real needs are ultimately going to be met, and that Christ will not fail us.
As we get into the holiday season and as we wrap up our time with Dr. Fazrana from Reasons to Believe, this is where we had an infusion, a God implant, if you would, into the world. That's the time that we celebrate. You know, as today we are talking about BCIs or brain computer interfaces, we have the ability, as we've been talking about, as well, to have a GCI, Fuzz, a God, well, I guess it would be a BGI, a brain God interface, or even a life God interface. But the world had an infusion of Jesus, and that's what we celebrate at this time of the year.
Yeah, you know, and that to me is, you know, one of the most amazing things about Christianity is to think that the Creator who brought everything that we see into existence actually wants us to know Him to the point that He became one of us to live among us and to identify with us and then to rescue us from our predicament as only someone who is both human and God can do. You know, and, you know, when you think about the fact that God would humble Himself to the point of becoming a human being, again, to express His love for us, that is just mind-blowing. It's more mind-blowing than anything we could ever discover about the universe. You know, it's more mind-boggling than any technology we could ever develop.
And the fact that it lines up even more beautifully than the science that we investigate and try to figure out, the Bible really does line up, and we see it line up with the laws of science, the laws of nature. We see it line up continuously. That gives me, as someone who, like you, has leanings towards the geeky and towards the scientific, it gives me such a joy and peace.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, to me, the thing that I find so deeply and profoundly encouraging is that the story that is presented to us in Scripture about our relationship with God is true, is demonstrably true because of the overwhelming, I think, scientific evidence for God's existence and for the reliability of the creation accounts, the historical and archaeological reliability of the Old and the New Testaments, you know, the historical evidence that we can bring to bear for Christ's life, death, and resurrection. You know, the Bible is true, and that, you know, to me gives me enormous amount of confidence in the hope that's being offered to me through the message of Scripture and through the gospel.
I have loved this conversation, as I always do, as I have over the years spending time with you, Dr. Fazrana. I want to encourage you, as you're listening, to go to reasons.org. You can peruse through their book section. You can shop online there. I think this is a really good time in history where people are putting a lot of faith in science to understand that there are deeper things afoot. There are things that are beyond science, and there's a God that is every bit as full of science, but also defies the scientific mind with His immensity and depth and the sheer complexity. So a lot of those things are talked about in the amazing books that you can find at reasons.org. In Time for Christmas, and maybe a great way to give someone food for thought and a deeper gift and a God story. Dr. Rana, thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
For more fun, go to mymichellelive.com.